Hello, I'm Douglas Frank, and I'm joined by Jirka Hollis. And thank you, Jirka, for joining me in this conversation. Our little project is Spotlight on Members, and I've been looking forward to having a conversation with you. So, welcome. So, Jirka, how did you come to the Buddha Dharma?
Thank you. Thank you, Douglas, for allowing us to have this excuse to connect again. And this is the right project to do at this time. It's wonderful. Thank you. I have accounted Dharma in the following way. I was living in a totalitarian country as a teenager and a young adult, and my mind was full of freedom, yearning for freedom in an unspecified way at that time. That was a big deal. And I felt quite bound or shackled, if you will, just like everybody at that time in that culture, in that society.
And that was Czechoslovakia, correct?
Yes.
Yes.
And I was not, and I am not really coming from a religious background at all, or any significant interest in spirituality in general, really. And I was in my high school days at that time, and I came across a book which was giving a Zen story about pilgrims climbing this steep hill, and it's raining and it's cold, and on the top there is this dilapidating, very much empty monastery and one monk catering it. And he sees them and he says, "You are cold, I can see that. I will start a fire for you." And then he is looking for wood and he cannot find anything. And so he chops this wooden statue of Buddha and then he makes fire. And these pilgrims are stunned. And I said, "It's a blasphemy." And the monk says, "The Buddha is not in that wood." And so I was reading this story at the time when, if we as, teenage high schoolers, if we, let's say, went to one of these enormous portraits of the communist leaders and we would make some funny faces, adding mustaches and so on, we would be, we would have a very hard time, We would not be able to continue in our studies. Our parents will be persecuted as well, actually. And so I saw an amazing opportunity for some opening in that tradition. And so that was that reference point, which that led me to approaching this tradition and embracing it.
And how did that next step or two steps down the line work in terms of actually meeting some Buddhists and meeting a teacher, etc.?
Well, that was a very long journey, right? I was born in a, what we call barbarian country. And so for many years, maybe 10 years, roughly speaking, it was a isolated journey of just accessing books, you know, studying English language so that I can read books, which are on that topic, in a environment with a strong censorship. It was, you know, engaging journey. And so I didn't really meet anybody who would be having a similar interest for many years until I was adult.
So what years are we talking about here when you in high school and reading this book with this story and then maybe studying on your own, basically?
It was maybe 1977 when I had that encounter.
And so you end up at Naropa Institute at some point. How did that come about to start studying there?
I wanted to, I had a strong desire to, so I was able at some point to reach to some practice communities in Czechoslovakia after the fall of communism. It became more available. And I saw that they were into practice, but they were not really interested in the study aspect. And then I also saw some universities programs in Prague. There was some tradition of Tibetan studies started by Josef Kolmash. But they were not really into the practice part. And so I was looking for an institution where they would join them. I had this intuition right from the beginning that this is what the tradition is about. There is no contradiction between the practice and the study aspect. And so I ended up at Naropa, coming as a student the same year when Dzogchen Pedlong Rinpoche came here as a faculty member. So that was wonderful coincidence.
So that's when you met Rinpoche and you began, I'm assuming, taking classes with him?
Yes, indeed. That's how I became his student. I was lucky.
What classes did you take with him at Naropa? Do you remember?
Oh, I remember that very well.
Okay.
My first classes with him were Buddha Nature class. And, believe it or not, Tibetan 3. It was the most amazing Tibetan class you can imagine, which always turns into a Dharma presentation class, of course, that was implied, but also very contemporary modern approach. Rinpoche was creating these tests in Western style from that material. And I remember until this day, you know, what text we were working on. It's wonderful.
So were you working on your BA in classes there, or were you working on your master's in Buddhist studies, right?
It's a, It's a master degree in Buddhist studies, yes.
And down the line, I would love to do another conversation with you to record about how your love and intuition and path around bringing together study and practice evolved into your becoming so involved with the Siddhartha Institute. And I would love to do another conversation around the Siddhartha Institute and your studies there and your involvement there, your passion there.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a large subject.
Exactly.
So, you know, just in very general, as a general note here, I did find what I was looking for at Naropa in general. You know, this is precisely what Naropa is about, joining the academic studies with the ground of practice, right? And so I started to acquire the skills in that regard, right? And then Nittata Institute was always my wish or target I always wanted to go to, but I didn't see any right from the beginning, right? When it started in 1996, which was the same year when I came to Boulder from Prague to study at Naropa. So a lot of things happened in 1996. but I didn't see how I could make it happen to come for a summer, full summer retreat situation in my life style. And then through some auspicious connection with Elizabeth Callahan, she just presented Nittata for me in a way that I got confidence that I actually would be able to come there. And so I did in 2002, you know, one time only. That was my framework, but I didn't, you know, leave from then on.
You got hooked by Nittata.
Yes, so that's Nittata is my home.
Yeah. So I would love to do another conversation to talk about that home in more detail, if that's possible. So, do you have a favorite slogan or a favorite teaching that is like your North Star that sort of helps orient you?
Yes, my favorite slogan, which is my North Star, is the refuge in the three jewels.
Mm.
Douglas, it goes like this. Mm. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma, and I take refuge in the Sangha.
Mm. And you come back to that on a regular basis.
Yes, so... you know, if you say why, right? This is right in your question. The three refuges are encompassing the entirety of the three trainings in higher, you know, Sila, Samadhi, Prajna, and you know, nothing within Buddha Dharma, in genuine Dharma, doesn't go beyond the three refuges.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an excellent, succinct formulation of the entirety of the Buddha Dharma. And also, as I said, I'm not coming from a religious background of religious zealots, let's say. I am a very doubting type, and my main drive, so to speak, is to come up to reality, you know, as things are, and how to lead life which is in accordance with reality, and in that way being of help to others and not be harmful, basically. And so yes, I am trying to ask this question, why I am Buddhist every day, like seriously. You know, that's what makes it real. That inquiry makes it, you know, meaningful.
So if you ask this every day, what is your asking today look like around why you're a Buddhist?
Well, today, these days, we are living in a very extraordinary situation. One friend of mine actually summarized it by that statement, "I can't breathe." You know, I can't breathe because of the police brutality. I can't breathe because of the pandemic. I can't breathe because of the fires. I can't breathe because of the thickness of the, you know, division within the society, and so on. So my theme, you know, this is connected with your next question. I can read your mind.
just stay in that part of my mind, please.
is breathing. My favorite activity this time is breathing. Yes, breathing. You know, breathe in, inhale. Yes, I am alive. And that's a wonderful luxury. And then breathe out. I can relax. You know, there is no need. If I am breathing, there is no need to carry all of those conceptual recollections of the past and anticipations of future in this uncertain time, right? So my favorite activity is breathing. And then if you ask, if we go back to your previous question about what's my today's answer, what's the answer to my question why I am Buddhist, or what is the connection with the three jewels taking refuge at this time, then I would say that mindfulness of breathing, right? Following the in and out breath is a peaceful dharma.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It doesn't have any flaw. Right? And then if folks are argumentative, you can say, if it has a flaw, then say what it is. But it's hard to imagine somebody stating that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a peaceful dharma.
Mm-hmm. And that practice of just being with the breath goes back to the Buddha over and over again.
Let me explain. That awareness of breathing at this time, at any time, is very quickly, experientially, not conceptually, you know, in direct experience, revealing the view of dependent origination. Mm-hmm. How? The inner and the outer, right? Mm-hmm. Inhaling, exhaling. They depend on each other, right? If I don't have oxygen for 3 minutes, I would be called dead. This body would stop functioning quickly. So how can I assert my independence as a bold ego? That's not warranted. I totally depend on this environment, on this ecology around me, right? And it's mutual, in fact. And so there is this view of dependent co-arising, right? Of the perceiver perceived, the object and subject, the outer and the inner, the in and out breath, in this way, experienced directly through the mindfulness of breathing. So you have a view of dependent origination. And this view does not have any flaw. That view does not have any flaw.
So this notion of a flaw is something that you work with in terms of what is flawless, what has flaws, what doesn't have a flaw.
Yeah. That's my habit, right?
Yeah.
Analyzing for a meaning.
Mm-hmm.
Like, how could somebody challenge the view of dependent arising? That's very difficult to imagine, really, without any religious, you know, associations or affiliations. That's very hard to imagine. So the view of dependent arising is flawless.
Mm-hmm.
And then, thirdly, through this practice of mindfulness of breathing, because it's very clear that I am not autonomous as an identity, I'm part of that network of dependent arising as evidenced by my breathing process, then I can see that we all are in it together, connected through interdependence. And that thought of being aware that we all are in it together through this interdependent web naturally leads me to be a person who is trying not to harm, not because of some God's commandment. But because of seeing dependent arising, the view of dependent arising is a basis for non-harming conduct. So, and the non-harming conduct is flawless. Non-harming conduct is flawless, yes.
Yeah.
And so in this way, we can see that from breathing comes meditation or technique which has no flaw. From breathing comes a view which has no flaw. And from breathing comes conduct which has no flaw. And since you, Buddha, have taught this meditation, this view, and this conduct, and because they have no flaw, they are flawless, I take refuge in Gautama Buddha. So that's my answer today at the time of pandemic when we are challenged with breathing to that question, why I am a Buddhist.
And that really captures the quote unquote fourth question that I submitted to you around how practice is helping you to navigate this period of COVID, et cetera, through flawless practice. Very earthy practice. Practice of being, that can be done moment by moment in all situations.
Yes, let's do it now.
Let's do it now. You've convinced me. I was wavering about whether or not.
We are very rich.
Oh my, absolutely.
Because we can breathe.
We can breathe. Absolutely. Well, thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate our conversation. The way that you work with the teachings, in terms of not just blind belief, but really looking at how to connect experientially with the Dharma.
Thank you. It's my joy, my pleasure.
Yeah.
And let's wish we will meet in person. And give each other a hug.
That would be absolutely wonderful. It is. Yeah. It's a very, very trying time. So I appreciate your willingness to be part of this conversation. And I would love to do a follow-up conversation another time around your involvement with Nyingma.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Yurka. Bless you and your family.